Looking to get into sports betting? Well, look no further than HedgeBetter. Traditional sports is rigged anyway. Here at HedgeBetter, we're working hard to create and develop the platform that revolutionizes the future of how we as a nation view sports betting. Traditional sports betting is designed to favor books and lose you money. HedgeBetter puts the odds in your hands, cuts out the middleman, and aims to empower a future generation of sports bettors. At HedgeBetter, your bet is an asset, and we give you all the tools to maximize your profits and potential. We can't wait to come to your state soon and help you make the most of your sports betting experience. In the meantime, be sure to visit our website at www.hedgebetter.com to learn more and sign up for our mailing list. To stay up to date with all of our content, podcasts, including Steel and Naz, promotion, and events, follow us on Instagram at HedgeBetter, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and click on the link on our website to check out our blog. Everyone, it's even on Monday. Let's have a day. Episode 73 here. Welcome to Steel and Naz, representing Popeye HedgeBetter from our headquarters in Braintree, Massachusetts. Tonight, we have Braintree Zone actually recording in Braintree tonight. Steve Dakota from Braintree Happis. He came on, talked about a bunch of stuff from his poker career to radio career, again, and he battles about Terry Francona.
Everywhere.
I'll tell you this right now. Sometimes we have a guest, and I don't really know, like, what to expect. That was primetime stuff. That was awesome to see. I think
he brought the heat.
That was incredible.
He could have been talking. I'm not taking it. Like, he could have talked about more stories. It was that cool. We got into a little bit about he had to take on Malcolm Butler, and also are aliens real? Something like that. It was kind of a whole
all over
thing, all over the place.
Stripper girlfriends. Did you already mention his clothing line?
And then Swing Juice.
Swing Juice. Cool, good clothes.
Baseball is not boring.
Yeah, no.
Baseball is
great,
not boring.
Golf attire. Definitely
linking cool. up with Joe Kelly. Good stuff.
Baseball is not boring.
Yeah, afterwards, we were laying down the law as Patrick J. Foley from the law offices of Patrick J. Foley came in studio. We shot the breeze about the Final Four. We made our picks for this week. All of the proceeds after the last day of the month right here is going to go to the Quincy, was it Special Needs Baseball League?
Correct, yes.
So that's great stuff. We kind of got into football, a little thing else. Brady, you know, gets Aaron's to retire from coaching. Talked about the Will Smith slap for a little bit. It's a great show. Anything else to add before we bring it to Dakota from Braintree here?
Just let it rip.
Yeah.
It's time.
Just get into it.
It's time. Now introducing Dakota from Braintree.
One.
We're now joined by Dakota from Braintree. That was the correctful speaking, am I right?
That works.
That's yeah. good.
Hey, also known as Steve Happis.
So Steve people, Happis.
Since you guys are Quincy guys, I grew up in Quincy. So
oh, really?
Anybody before I graduated knows me as Steve Happis. Anybody post would know me as Dakota. So
oh, good stuff.
You a Quincy or North guy?
North Quincy all the way.
Okay.
Right here, too.
Okay.
Right
head,
here. Red
good.
Raider.
All right.
I'm a Quincy
2010.
Well, I feel bad for you.
Yeah, all right. Depending on what year you're talking about.
We didn't lose my Turkey Day year, so.
There you go.
Mine either.
I'll start off right away. So, CEO of Swing Juice. Just tell me about Swing Juice a little bit, because I saw more of just like clothing apparel, but didn't really know too much about it. I don't know if listeners or anything like that or you know, want to know.
Yeah, so Swing Juice was started by a friend of mine almost 2004 as a beverage company. Wanted to get into the highly competitive energy space, you know, and obviously Red Bull, Monster, all those. And, you know, then he just kind of was hat, t-shirt, and hoodie company, just kind of mm-hmm. as a side gig. Had a great brand. He had a great vision, great designs. And, you know, he came to me and asked me for help. And I had enough. I have funds in my company and logistics and support around them. So we basically just rolled this company into mine. And we wanted to relaunch the brand as kind of like a fun lifestyle apparel brand for golf fanatics. And then we ended up doing a deal with the Major League Baseball Players Association. So we quickly added on baseball to it. So
really cool. So who got involved there? Because I see the whole base baseball is boring thing. That's pretty cool.
So
who isn't boring?
Kelly. Yeah. So
isn't boring.
That's correct.
Come on,
so,
buddy. Yeah.
I blew it.
So Jose Cruz Jr., I don't know if you know the name, he was working for Major League Baseball, the Players Association, and he's a huge golfer. And he was following the brand, likes it, buys some of the stuff, and he reached out to us. And said, hey, what do you think about creating, you know, this kind of fun lifestyle for the individual players? As, you know, as part of the initiative that they're trying to do, mm-hmm. as you can see, is get more active on social, try to be more likable and bring kind of baseball back. And that kind of spawned this with Joe Kelly with the Baseball Isn't Boring initiative, where we didn't know where it was going to go. And even yesterday, Tom Caron on Nesson in between the games is holding up the Baseball Isn't Boring, saying all the Red Sox are wearing these in the clubhouse. And like, that's great. Never mentioned swing juice, but they just mentioned Catch a Wildfire.
It's there, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But where they found us. But they found us. Google, you know, organic traffic went up. People are smart enough nowadays. They just type it into Google and they can find us.
And was that like Joe Kelly, like when he was on the Red Sox and stuff?
No, this all came about like 2 months ago. We put this together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Joe Kelly and Rob Bradford came to me and said, hey, we're thinking of this initiative. Do you guys want to collab with us on it? We're like, yeah, this is right in our wheelhouse. And they just gave us carte blanche and let us do what we need to do, and wherever Joe wants to get shirts, we just send him a bunch of shirts and he gets the players to wear them and everything. So it's pretty good.
Former Squantum guy there too, Joe Kelly.
So this is what I've learned, because I knew he was living in Quincy when he was here, mm-hmm. and I said, Joe, I like, well, you know, where in Quincy were you? He goes, I was in Squantum. I'm like, oh, Marina Bay. The night, he goes, no, I was literally in Squantum.
He was a part of the community. Like, yeah, they loved him.
Right, yeah. Part of the community. And he's like, it was so great. I used to just go out in the middle of the street and play street hockey with all the locals. He goes, my nanny was so inbred in our family, they moved her out to L.A. when he went to the Dodgers. So from that standpoint, Joe Kelly is, you know, like one of us. He's a Quincy guy, the way I look at it.
Oh, for sure.
But this all came about because he was rehabbing and was a free agent. And he was like, he wasn't sure, I think, what direction he was going to go, maybe. Mm-hmm. And kind of 2 months ago, just said, let's go forward with it. And he's got a lot of press recently.
Who'd he sign? Because he's not with the Dodgers.
Chicago White Sox.
That's a good team, too. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a good pickup.
It's a gritty team for him. Campbell. Love that. Yeah.
And you know
love
what?
That.
And I love Joe. Listen, this isn't because I'm doing a collab with Joe Kelly. Uh-huh. I was one of those guys when the Red Sox got him that I knew his arm was lightning.
He throws BBs.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are the guys you want in the playoffs that come in to strike people out. That's it. That's what you want. You want guys to strike people out. And Joe Kelly has the stuff that you saw all of a sudden. He pitched the best in the playoffs, better than any time during that regular season. So to me, I'm a huge Joe Kelly fan.
Oh, the whole back and forth with Correa. Incredible.
Yeah.
Me and him were there when he fought Tyler Austin on the Yankees. Place was rocking.
His fight of Tyler Austin was probably a lot of hate because he's a Yankee, that guy.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
What did you think about like baseball almost being locked out? Is baseball your favorite sport or
so,
out of the four?
So I grew up playing baseball. I mean, as of 5 years ago, I was playing in four different leagues in baseball playing. I reached a pinnacle. I was
Cranberry League. Any shout outs?
Yep. Played Cranberry League. Nice. That was early on though.
White Sox?
The Braintree White Sox. Yeah. I didn't play for the Braintree White Sox. I played for the Quincy Sheriffs back in the day. And then
love that.
Never heard of them.
I got some with the Quincy Sheriffs.
I got some Canton A's experience.
Yeah.
Right now.
So Canton. So I went to Bridgewater State, played baseball there. I was a slapstick shortstop, couldn't hit my weight. And, you know, I'd walk at four at bats. I'd walk twice, but I might go 0-for-1 or 0-for-2. And I'm an analytical guy.
OBP.
Here I am. This is 1990 now we're talking, okay? There wasn't on-base percentage back then, but I figured it out. I'm like, no, look at how many times I'm getting on base. I used to have arguments with my coach at the time, Glenn Tufts, who was drafted, I think, number 3 behind Winfield and Yount, I think, that year, and then ended up getting in a bad car accident in spring training. So he never played. He never made it to pro ball. So me and him kind of clashed a little bit, because I batted ninth, but I was getting on base better than anybody. And finally, later on in life, I think as analytics came in, they realized the value of a guy that just, you know, was going to walk and get singles. And, you know, forever I played in the Yawkey League, the Park League, Cranberry a little bit, the MLB 18+, MSBL over 30, over 40.
And, oh, let's go.
Yeah, I literally played 140 games for a few years in a row. And this was only 4 or 5 years ago with over 600 bats.
Oh, we got a slow pitch team.
I'll never play softball, and I'm just not going to do it.
Coming off the title.
What's your beef with softball?
That could entice you.
For all you ladies out there that might be tuning in, I have small hands. And when you have small hands, you don't want to play softball.
Why is that?
So the ball is bigger. It's I don't. Big, dude. I don't have the same grip. I've got a cannon for an arm, but when it comes to softball, the weight of the softball and the size of the circumference is so different. You just don't generate the same arm speed.
Fair enough.
That's a problem. So my skills that I would have on going into the hole as a shortstop with a baseball are different than a softball.
We could use you at shortstop. Yeah, our shortstop sucks.
Not going to happen.
You must have gone.
Wait a minute. Are you the shortstop?
No.
You guys the shortstop?
He's just a guy we regularly shit on the show.
Yeah. maybe
he's a good guy. Good player too, actually.
Yeah. You must have sized it up and have already gone through it, so I'm not going to say my spiel of it.
Yeah.
But I think that's bullshit. I think you could do it.
I'm not saying I couldn't do it. I just don't want to do it.
Don't want to do it.
It's kind of like...
That's fair.
I think that was the fairest no we've ever gotten.
it's kind of like... I don't know if you guys ever done cocaine in your life, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if we can even go there, right?
No, but let's go.
I want to bring this up. So for years, I never did drugs. My father was a raging alcoholic. So to me, I was anti-drugs, anti-alcohol growing up. I decided to live with my dad because... He was an alcoholic, and he got divorced. Everybody left him, and I wanted to be there for him.
Yeah.
So I felt I could fix my dad, right? So I never did alcohol, never did drugs. And I went – I remember showing up at Bridgewater as a freshman to the first party up at the dorms up the hill up there. I don't know if you've ever been to the hill at Bridgewater State. Yeah. And the hill's – part. So I walk in. It's a baseball party, bunch of kids. I'm not going to out anybody. Maybe I will. I don't know.
So, see how it goes.
I'll see how the story navigates. And by the way, Pete McNeely was there. So,
nice.
So anyways, I walk in as a freshman playing baseball, and all of a sudden I look over at the kitchen table, and here's a lot of the senior members of my baseball team sniffing coke. And I'm just like, oh, God, what did I just get myself walk into? So I immediately didn't want any – I think I walked in, checked out, see if there was any girls or anything in there, and I just made a beeline left. I didn't even want to put myself in that position. Mm-hmm. So I always was like, you know, oh, you've never done coke? Nope, never had it. And then I think I was in Vegas. Of course, it's Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to say 8 or 10 years ago, I forget. And I'm at the Palms with a bunch of poker buddies. I think we're out there for one of the World Series events. And poker buddies, they like to do coke sometimes, right? Like Adderall, whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Just to do it, I'm going to try it. Just to say that
take it down many men then. You know what I mean?
So I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to try it. And I tried it. I didn't really, I don't even know if I did it right. Like I'm one of those guys that I think I smoke weed, but I don't.
Feel like you wanted to run through a wall and open a business?
I don't.
Is that how swing juice started?
That could have happened, but that was it. I tried cocaine. I think I did it correctly. And I never did it again, and that was it. And I wasn't sure how it was going to react. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I wasn't sure how it was also going to interact with me. So I just told everybody around me, all my friends, I'm like, just keep an eye on me. You know, like, don't leave me out of your sight.
Now,
at least you're not going
to. Hey, I did not know that I was going to be coming to you guys doing a podcast talking about my cocaine experience.
We didn't see that coming. That wasn't on our list of questions.
It was definitely not. So
we're not talking to Chris Herron today.
So forget it. I'm definitely not running for governor of Massachusetts now. I don't know.
You're talking about a little bit. We actually have a poker game going out right there. So I want to know your poker background of, you know, you're going to Vegas. Watch. I don't know if you're participating or watching these World Series.
I'm playing. If I'm going to Vegas, taking a 5.5-hour flight.
So how did that start?
It started. I'm half Greek, half Armenian. So every Sunday night in my house, there was a poker game. Uncles, friends, relatives, dad, whatever. And as soon as I was 18, they let me in the game, and that was it.
The rest was history.
I learned all the different crisscross games, this and that, extra card, buy one. We didn't even play No Limit Hold'em back then. Mm. It really wasn't a game. It was only a Texas game, and I don't even think it made it to Vegas yet. This was talking a long time ago in Quincy, right on Paramount Street. That's where I grew up.
Right around there. I live in Wollaston.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yep. And so that was it. That started my poker. And then as soon as I was down in Daytona in 1991, 92, I had a Honda Prelude SI, four-wheel steering. I thought it was the shit, right, because all four wheels stared. And me and my roommate, we drove down, and on the way back, we're in Connecticut, and we stopped at, like, the Burger King or McDonald's, I think, on 95 in Bridgeport. And my roommate goes to me. He goes, I think there's a casino, like, pretty close to here. I'm like, what? A casino? I'm like, we should just stop by.
Of course, yeah. Start dabble.
Exactly.
See what it's about.
So I've never been to a casino in my life at that point. I'm 20, 21 at the time, 22. Oh. And So we obviously stop at Foxwoods, and I walk in, and we figured we're just going to play a couple.
Instantly hooked.
But I didn't even play poker, though, my first time. I walked in, and the poker room was, like, packed. And I just walked to a blackjack table, had $200. I ran it up to $1,200 and then lost it all. And I was like, that was stupid. So I was
welcome.
Like, yeah, I was like, okay, that's not how it's supposed to go. And I ended up driving back to Bridgewater with my roommate. And then all of a sudden, I was like, you know what? There's got to be more poker games. And I kind of found, like, these Lodge and these Elks places that would have poker games. Like, they'd have these circle tables, and it was the deal. They passed around the deck to deal, and it was a small, like, 1-2, 7-card stud game. They weren't playing Hold'em back then. And that was pretty much it. So then I started going to Foxwoods 4 or 5 times a week. I'd travel to Atlantic City, play at the Taj. Yes, the Taj. So when Matt Damon did all that, I was there. And I was there for the first U.S. Poker Championship that Donald Trump, yes, President Donald Trump, he put on, I think it was 1994 or 90, no, it had to be 96. it was at the Taj, and the first tournament that I ever played, I final tabled, but it wasn't an official final table because I was 10th man. It was a 7-card stud tournament, and got to the final table, but I got busted out, so it was the top 9. And I think Men the Master, at that final table. Robbie Johnson. I forget a few other names. Men is the most.
Have you played with like all those? Well, I mean, I remember watching. It was like Phil Hellmuth.
I played with Phil Hellmuth. I played with Phil Ivey. I played with Teddy Forrester. Half of the guys I've probably played with.
That's awesome.
The best guy I ever sat next to was Carlos Mortensen. I don't know if you know Carlos.
I don't think so.
One of the most successful poker players.
It was weird. Poker came in like a hurricane for a couple of years, then kind of disappeared.
Like the hurricane. It's like a callback in the space.
I wasn't trying to, but yeah.
Any of you guys comedians at all? You guys comedians?
I think
try to stand up.
I fuck around with some stuff.
Question for myself. How do you like distinguish like, oh, this guy's a bad man on the poker table? Like you were saying, you sit next to this guy that you know has everything in his arsenal.
So a lot of times you're sitting next to people because of the age of online, you have no idea who they are. Like you want your anonymity, whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
This is why I'm here and not teaching English classes or whatever. So a lot of times they'll have no idea who you are. You know, people wearing sunglasses and your buddy might come over to the table and go, nice table you got. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, he's got a million in earnings. He's got this. That guy just won that. And I'm like, oh, great. But at least you know what you're up against, right?
Yeah.
And you know that they're going to make every move possible. So it makes you kind of change up your game. You have to, because they're going to find out about you. I mean, whenever you make a day two of a tournament, you're looking at your seed draw and you're trying to find out, okay, who has success, who doesn't. And every day that goes by that you advance, we're always scouting. You know, poker players scout each other, figure out who they are. Yeah. They'll throw you in Google, look on Hended Mob and see your earnings.
But you're saying online poker, it's like playing online poker. You can't really do that, right? Or I guess you can scout the names, though. So, you know the username. Yeah,
yes, you can. And they have now software and algo that will just lay over, and they'll tell everything about you or me.
All right.
So they'll give you my fold rate, you know, my bet rate, raise rate, everything.
Yeah, what he does when this happens or that fucking analytics.
You can't you can't trust online poker anyways. Everything has always been busted, you know, from scandals and everything else because it's software, right? Mm-hmm. Whoever creates the software, you can create back doors. You can create it. So
good point.
What was the biggest table you ever like made it to? Like the biggest one where you were like, holy shit, I'm here.
There was, I don't think I ever, well, the biggest tournament that I played in was the World Series of Poker. It was the little one drop. I don't know if you remember the little one drops they have. So they have the big one drop, which is like $1 million or maybe $100,000 buy-in. And then they have the little one drop, which is like $1,111. That's buy-in. Mm-hmm. And I think, I want to say they had 6,000 people and I got down to 33rd in that tournament. I think it was 17 grand or 30. I forget. My memory is so gone. I'd have to look it up online. But, you know, that was fun. That was down to 3 tables with, you know, I think first place was maybe 700 grand.
Jeez.
I've had final tables, but not in super huge tournaments. I've won a few. I finished third quite a bit. You know, I mean, I used to have success when I was playing, but it's just too much of a grind.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that, like, retirement come of playing poker like that deep.
After baseball, I tore my shoulder ligament, and I was just like, I couldn't sit still. I'm used to being on a field every day, so I started playing golf, and that got me so competitive playing golf because I was so bad. I'm like, I wanted to kind of
Yeah, let's get there.
I want to be successful whatever I do.
Yeah.
Much like you do in a poker player or a podcast or whatever you do, right? We all strive to be successful. Nobody strives to be shit, right?
Any hole-in-ones yet?
No, but I do videotape on live. Twitter's all messed up now about live, so it's easy just to like video it live and then
put it on
and then post it. So I try to all my par threes now. I try to like show my par threes and you know. So, but I haven't got it yet. I started 5 years ago playing, and I was shooting in the hundreds. And now, if I don't get down to the low 80s, 78, 79.
Yeah, there's a lot around the area. Yeah. What's like your go-to? You go to Braintree a lot?
Granite Links.
Love it right here. I'm
5 minutes away.
Our sponsor.
The motherland, yeah.
Sponsor.
They sponsor you guys?
Yeah.
They did.
They had one season of advertising. Yeah, that's my personal
friend. We'll get them back.
Who's your friend over there?
I know I'm family friends with the O'Connells.
So I've been talking with actually Nick Tedeschi, the pro over there.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to get some swing juice apparel in Granite Links. So.
Hell yeah.
Plus, I'm there.
We'll walk in with you.
Yeah, I'm in there twice a week. I try to book a tee time. I love it there.
What's your favorite nine?
That's a good. I love all 27. I don't have a favorite nine.
Nah. Yeah.
What's your favorite hole?
The favorite hole. One. Oof. It's probably one of the ones that it's very difficult for you. And it's probably the par five on Quincy along the road, because you're always in kind of a position that you want to go for it after you drive.
Yeah, let me talk about that.
But if you're bad left off the tee, you're hitting a house, a condo, mm-hmm. right? If you're right, then you have to, can't drive up the hill, so that sucks. You got to walk up into the other field. Mm-hmm. And if you hit it straight, you got the two traps in front of you. But you're always in it. So now I figured it out. Instead of trying to go for it, I play super conservative, just get on in three, take the par, and go home. Because I'm normally still going to double bogey that. And my lowest score that I got, I was, I think, one over after nine. And now I'm challenging the back nine on Quincy. And this is a hole I'm going to get a seven on. And I'm like, I have a real shot at my best score ever. Mm-hmm. That's when I started. I go, you know what? Easy driver, like five iron with a wedge, two putt, take the five and go home.
Let's go.
As soon as I parred that hole, I knew that round was for me. And then the next hole, that par three, which is super difficult, mm-hmm. I stuck it on the green. And then I ended up double bogeying that par five. And then went birdie, double bogey, and then birdie, birdie, I think par. Anyway, I ended up shooting a 72. It was my lowest round.
Oh, hell yeah. So, that's wow.
Yeah. So talk about pushing yourself. Yeah. When did you like exactly get into the golf game? Because you said, you know, you
were five years ago. That's
unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. I got 85 rounds in last year, so I play a lot of golf.
Okay.
Yeah. He's out there. He's out there.
That's the entrepreneur life, right?
Exactly.
Make your own schedule.
Listen, everybody
live
knows.
Live free.
I all my calls, they'll all be done by 1 o'clock. So if it's nice out,
you're hitting the course.
I'm going right to the course.
Oh, yeah. I'll drop off some shirts at your golf course.
Yeah. Sure.
What's up with, like, your Twitter career? How did you get, like, such a following? Like, how did that, like, start?
So I remember the kid threw baseball in 2010. He goes, you got to join Twitter. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm not on anything at the time. Maybe Facebook. We just started 2008. Because mm-hmm. my Twitter account says I started in 2010, but I don't think I tweeted anything for, like, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So I was just like anybody else, bored, and says, you know what, let me just try doing some more things on Twitter and trying to build up a public profile and maybe leverage that with business or something like that. And then I started, you know, when COVID hit and I started getting more involved in doing the stuff with Swing Juice, I'm like, all right, because most of the stuff I've been involved with is more business to business stuff. It's not consumer oriented.
Yeah.
So I don't really need Twitter for that. Mm-hmm. So once I was like, okay, looking to sell things to the consumer, I'm like, well, maybe I could just be more active on Instagram or Twitter. And I'm still not even active that on Instagram. And I just, like, then COVID hit and people were having issues with money. And I was blowing a lot of money in the stock market. So I'm like, you know what? Instead of blowing the money in the market, let me just put aside money and I'll start giving out cash. So I started to create these sports props that I would make up because I'm a diehard sports fan. I used to love gambling. I like betting futures. That I would just pick a sport and say, like, all right, if Brady throws for 300 yards and three touchdown passes in this, I'll give away like $5,000 to five people, win $1,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just started doing that during COVID because I don't know how about you guys. I was super stressed out. Like, I hated being locked down.
Awful. Oh, it's terrible.
You know,
it's
like,
awful.
I every day you're looking at hospitalizations, count. How long is this going to keep going? We can't go out.
Who to listen to? You know,
I like being out every night. Like, literally, I go home, I'm dropping my bag off, and I'm finding a place to eat and drink.
Yeah, get a cheeseburger or something. You know what I mean? Christ.
Never a cheeseburger.
Never a cheeseburger.
Not always. Not always. I will splurge, but I'll stay away from cheeseburgers. So from that standpoint, I was just like, I said, let's see how it actually started. I was in my living room with a degenerate friend of mine who gambles on everything, poker player, moved to Florida right now. Chris, if you listen to this, you know, and you don't care. So
shout out, Chris.
Yeah. So and talk about degen. I was sweating them at the Hard Rock when I was down there a month ago. He's playing Baccarat right now, like 5,000 a hand. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
We got to get Chris on the podcast,
man. Oh, my God.
Stories of Chris.
It's insane. Yeah, call him in. Just follow him on Instagram. He's funny.
What's his handle?
I think it's Love It or Hate It. I don't know. I think
great name. Great name.
His name is Chris Love It. I don't know. So okay. If any of the poker, all the poker players.
We'll find him.
So anyways, so we're sitting in the living room, and the Celtics go down 0-2. I think this was in the bubble, so it had to be during COVID, right? I was super pissed. I was like, I can swear, actually. I was like, fuck this. This is bullshit, right? So I'm like, that's it. I'm just going to post something on Twitter that if the Celtics come back from the series, I'm going to give $10,000 away. You know, like 10 people win $1,000. I was so pissed.
So
you're pissed, you just give away your money?
No, so what I was saying is I was so pissed that the Celtics got down 0-2 and they should have won like those both of those first two games that if they came back and won, I'd be happy. I wouldn't care. Give away the $10,000. Like, I'd be psyched that they came back. So I ended up did it, and the thing like got retweeted like 5,000 to 10,000 times. And my followers picked up like a couple of thousand. And then I'm like, all right, wait a minute. There's something going on here. Like, people do want to follow this. It's something different. And hey, who doesn't want to have a chance of winning?
Chasing the money.
Yeah, of course.
Chasing the money. But you know what? And then it was amazing. After, I don't think they didn't come back. But then I started doing it once the Patriots season started and other things, and the NBA continued. And then I didn't know how I was going to pick the winners. Like, I had an idea, but I was like, all right, how am I going to, like, 2,000 people that qualified for this because they retweeted or favorited or whatever? I'm like, how am I going to decide who's going to win? So now I had to come up with something on the fly once I had to give out a winner. So I'm like, all right, I'll randomly, like, find some app that will throw everybody in and randomize and give it to me. I couldn't find anything. Every app, third-party software would just say, we're going to take the last 100 followers that qualified, that did it, whatever, and that's it. That's all the giveaway.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's whack.
That's
ruining other people's chances, yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, that's not fair. So then I'm talking to my developers. I'm like, how quickly can you guys write me a script that I can like throw? And they're like, this is too difficult. We can't do this. I'm like, all right, I'll figure it out. So basically I had to tell everybody what the rules were, how I was going to pick it. So I decided just to randomly go through, like I'd screenshot 100 at a time. So if there was 2,000 people, I'd literally have like 50 screenshots of 10 in a row. And I'm just like scrolling going, okay, you're in. And I'd write their handle and name on it. But you had to have a profile because there was a lot of scammers. Whenever you're giving out free money, I also got an opportunity just to make sure these people were legit.
Were real.
Yeah, not the number, the bots. Exactly.
Because that's what is fair. Yeah. Like, you could be, there's so many fake like accounts, or there's people that are claiming to be something not. So like Instagram or even Facebook is something you'd be like, all right, this is the person. So Twitter, out of all of them, it's got to be the hardest way to go.
Yeah. So here I am writing this stuff down. And so I'm like, all right, I got to do this random draw. And back then, Twitter Live was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I Twitter Lived it out. And I love cashews. I had an empty cashew can. And I'm like, all right, let me just rip all the names up that I put in. And I put like 30 names and I folded them all up. And I showed everybody the can was empty, and folding it up and putting it into the can, shaking it up. And then I'm like, all right, the first one that comes out is going to win $500. And I just show it on the screen and put it down.
And I really hope they've made a randomizer app by now. I swear to God, it exists.
I you know what? I kind of,
because that's so old school the way it's described. It's a hassle.
I know. So get this. So now I've got all this Twitter hate of people. You can't do that. That's not fair. Yada yada yada. They're all like yelling at me. I'm like, first of all, then people are like, it's his money. He can do whatever he
wants.
Yeah, you're hitting a button. Fuck off.
I know. So then here's the worst part about it. So on the first giveaway, I'm like reading out like their at handles. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I had to open up like my DMs, and they were messaging me this and that. And I'm like, oh, all right, here's the winner. I'm like, hey, can you send me your Venmo? Like, I had Venmo at the time. And they're like, well, I don't have Venmo, but I got PayPal. I'm like, that's fine. I'll do it through PayPal. And sent the money. A couple of times more. Sent somebody money. Now I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, this is, like, weird. Everybody wants PayPal. There were these fake people on Twitter that screen scraped the entire profiles of the winners. And when you go to their page, they have every retweet, every photo, and looks just like them. They have some bot that basically copies your entire profile, text, all your tweets, your likes, and everything.
Wow. Oh.
So I was like, all right, this is not going to be good.
yeah, fuck.
So
trying to do something good.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, what did I get myself into? So I decided to change it up where I wouldn't put their at handles. I would just mention their name. I wouldn't put anything right. I closed my DMs, and I said, I'm going to DM the winners. So this way nobody could message me and say, hey, I'm so-and-so, I just won, and that was one way, and then that cured it. And then people were pissed, like, that I did that, mostly from all the scammers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could weed them out then.
Yeah. No, I knew right away, and it was funny. Like, somebody scammed me twice, but that was
I can see that grow in the profile, though, with all, yeah, like, yeah, you get, yeah, I saw go. One yeah, of I mean, them you did.
What are you going to do?
You know, you had, like, 600 like retweets or something on it. I mean, that will get your followers up quick.
And it's unbelievable. Yeah, so that's how this started. So that's how the old Twitter thing happened. And then it started getting mentioned on 98.5 or WEEI, and, you know, so then people the people that I reach out to, whether I'm as a caller or not, or through old radio that I did, they're like, oh, he's on Twitter, and kind of built up the following there. So
nice.
Been stagnant for a while, though. I haven't really focused on it too much, so I'm stuck at around like 15.7 or whatever. But well, I think I got a good base.
Good chunk.
Every time.
Now it seems like you're doing videos too, so that's a good way to build your brand for Swing Juice and everything.
Now I'm just
you don't have to do it as much now. You got a good following base, like you just said. You know,
I'm
good on camera and charismatic, so now you can carry yourself. Yeah, with the followers.
I try anyways, but you know, a lot of people, I wear two gloves on the golf course sometimes, and the heat I'll get from it, like my hands sweat, and I have small hands.
That's a ballsy move, I like that.
So here's the thing. So now I'm videotaping myself, and I've got two gloves. The Twitter hate that I got, that I'm the guy on the golf course with two gloves. It's fucking insane.
Hey, we'll attack, do you need us
That's
to
tough.
Attack them?
That's tough.
We'll attack your haters
no,
if you
fine.
Want.
I basically just tell them to fuck off. I go, listen, you know, it's like 95 degrees out. I have sweat in my hands, and the club is just flying. You can't grip it. So I'm like, I used my rain gloves, and I started putting up low rounds in the heat. And I'm like, I'm not taking my gloves off. My score is more important than some guy on Twitter.
Yeah,
you know, like
whatever works. Whatever works.
Whatever works. So you know, and that's the Twitter story.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a radio background. Like what? Like where did that come from?
So I went to Bridgewater to get into radio communications.
Yeah.
But quickly realized there was no money in it. And to me, you know, growing up in Quincy, we struggled for everything that we had. We begged, borrowed, stealed, whatever. I remember stealing little 25-cent little grape things out of George's Market
whatever
right next
takes.
To Montclair Ooh, store.
George's, yep.
And then I'd, and then, yeah, and, oh, yeah. And then I'd give them to my friends. Like, I would just, you know, like that's what we did. You know, or we played quarters. We did anything possible to try to make some money. So to me, I always wanted to be able to make money. But I also wanted to do stuff on radio and TV because I had a passion for sports, much like all of us, right? We all grew up and said, you know what? We're either going to play professional sports or we want to announce it somehow. And I just like – I wanted to go into sales. I didn't want to like work up in Portland, Maine doing some internship or whatever. And I got into sales and sports handicapping. And a friend of mine was interning at WEEI at the time. I don't even know if they were EEI at the time. And he goes, hey, can you call in? We need callers. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I think I was – the cell phone error is like $4 every minute.
It's like phone sex.
Oh, yeah. You owe me.
This is when you had like 20 minutes of battery life, you know, like the big brick Gordon Gecko brick phone that you carried around. Because, of course, I had to have the cell phone as soon as it came out. And I called in. And I was like, yeah, you just got to keep calling. That was good. And, you know, all right, whatever to help you out. And then I just started calling in more, and then I started playing poker and having success. And the Boston Herald used to write, you know, local kid finished X in the World Series and this and that. So then I started using Dakota because when I went out to Vegas, they said, don't ever use your real name. So my buddy said, you never know, the IRS or somebody might try to steal your money to come to your room. I'm like, fuck, you got to be shitting me. So the last thing I wanted to do was use my real name. So I just came up with the name Dakota and was known in the poker community as Dakota. And then I came back to the East Coast, started playing. And then when I started calling in, I'm like, well, if I'm going to call in, I ain't going to be Steve or some stupid, boring name.
So you went with that one.
So I went with Dakota. And then anything I did publicly, I just used Dakota. And then I think in 2000, back in the early 2000s, this is when the Big Show on WEEI was just taken off. Yeah. Like the Red Sox were the thing. And I used to get in battles with D'Ossi and Ordway and the Wine Line, won a Winey Award and all that stuff. So I was getting tons of press just being as a caller, and now they would call it a celebrity caller, which a lot of people hate. And fucking, I don't care. Right? Bring the hate. I strive for hate.
You call out the other people's bullshit. That's what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the general manager at the time at 1510, which was owned by Sporting News Radio, he's like, hey, you know what? We don't have a morning show. You want to come in here and do a morning show? And he's like, I can't pay you. And I'm like, I don't care. I go, well, can I sell my own ads? And if I do, can I keep some of the money, whatever? He's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want. Like, I have this time. And so I went over there, and I remember having, like, Chris Price as my first. He called me in during the summer. He goes,
Patriots writer, right?
Yeah. Yep. So he goes, and I don't know how – yes, now I know. So at the time in 2000, I published a magazine. I decided to get into the magazine space. This is pre-Barstool, by the way, which I declined to get involved with early on. And it was a Maxim-like magazine for Boston. And I did it with S.J. Torres. He owned the place. And at that point, we were like, all right, let's put something out there that was like Maxim, but it was for Boston. So I blew all the money I had to publish this magazine. And had to bring in writers, and Chris Price was one of the writers. A friend of mine went to Notre Dame. He was the editor of the Blue and Gold, so I had my editor. I had a designer. I had, like, enough pieces that I said, oh, let me figure this out. I have no idea what I'm doing, but everybody else does.
It's for me. Yeah, exactly. It's getting there.
I'm a good Bill Belichick, okay? Yeah. I'm a terrible coach, but I know how to hire. And so from that standpoint, I had Chris Price on and did a show for 3 hours on 1510. He's like, yeah. He goes, that was pretty good. He goes, you want to do the show every morning, 7 to 10. And I'm like, all right, what time do I have to get up and leave Braintree? It's like 4 a.m. to get to Burlington by 6 all that stuff. But that's how I got thrown into it. And then he stuck me with Kevin Winter, who was on the Diehards, who now Kevin Winter does ESPN National and stuff like that. And then a few other guys, Chuck Morrison, Big Joe Murray.
Yeah, Big Joe. We've had Big Joe on the show.
So they were all over there at the same time. I didn't really. Eddie Andelman was right after me.
I think is that the station that Big Joe and Mark Bertrand were co-hosts?
So that might have been after it was 1510. That might have been when it went to be ESPN. I think Felger was also over there at the time. Mm-hmm. When I was there, it was right after Sean McDonough, Holly, I think Maserati. They had that morning show. They're raising the bar.
And what was the magazine called?
Boston City Beat.
Boston City Beat.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
All like scantily clad, half naked girls, and all about nightlife. That's what
you need the girls. If you look at the
bar. I should have brought a copy. I still have them in my office. I still have copies.
That would be sick.
You don't live too far. You can bring it.
I know.
That could be memorabilia for you.
I had all the copies delivered right here. We should make an NFT of it. So that got into. I started getting into radio, doing a morning show with Kevin Winter was my sidekick. And at the time, I was not a fan of Terry Francona's in managerial decision. So I was very vocal about it. And my morning show did not last too long because of I decided Kevin Winter teed me up and said, hey, did you see this blurb on page 6 in the New York Post? And I'm like, no. He goes, I'm going to read you something. I still have this on tape, by the way.
Yeah.
It's on like a floppy disk or something. And he goes, "What?" I'm paraphrasing. He goes, Richard Johnson in New York Post said, what former National League manager is now – managing in the American League, left his wife and family hundreds of miles away, living in a hotel in his new town, but has been gallivanting around town with a local female sports anchor. So at the time,
Hazel Bay.
So at the time, okay, I used to have Jamie Parker on the show all the time. Jamie lives in Braintree. I think Kevin Winter was friends with the BC connection from that standpoint. So we used to hear stories about some of these local sports female girls, and Hazel May was one of them. Hazel came with a reputation. And so I'm like, well, who's the manager? So we start volleying back and forth. And at the time, I used to have Nick Cafato on, God rest your soul. Nick said, you know, yeah. And I called him up. I go, I think this is Francona. I go, does he live in a hotel? And he's like, yeah, he stays at the Brookline Marriott. That's where Francona stayed when he was managing. Mm. So I'm like, all right, me and Kevin that morning, we start volleying back. All right, is it this manager?
The dots are connected.
So all I decided to say was, you know, it seems to me that the New York Post is inferring that it's Terry Francona that he's talking about. I'm not saying that it is. Now, this is me role-playing myself.
Allegedly.
I can say that word, I guess. See, I wasn't experienced enough to couch my words in a certain way. So to me, I'm jumping off, right? I'm in morning show first, you know, I'm making a splash, this and that, trying to do what I can. So now I'm taking the nail, and I'm my words are like, I'm not saying it is him, okay? But I'm connecting all the dots here, and then we're like, if it is Terry Francona, who could be that female local sports? So obviously, I think it's Boston. So we're going through everybody. Well, it can't be Jamie Parker. She's married, you know, friend of the show, yada, yada. Can't be Wendy Nix. It can't be this girl. I'll go, maybe it's Hazel May. So during one of the breaks, now granted, you know how radio is. You have an audience for 20 minutes. So we're teeing this up after every break coming back. And phones are lighting up. People are, how can you be calling out? Like, this is the best radio ever. It's going on right here. So I think I've struck gold. And anyways, so I said, you know what? Just in case, I'm going to call Richard. So during one of the break, I pick up the phone and I call Richard Johnson. And I get a hold of him in the morning of the show. And I'm like, hey, this is so-and-so. I'm up in Boston. I'm doing a radio show. And, you know, I just been reading the thing about the Page Six, Terry Francona. And I didn't say Terry Francona. I go, I've been mentioning a few names on the show about who I think it could be, Terry Francona or Hazel May. And he's like, well, you're kind of half right. So I'm like, okay, so I got the female sports anchor wrong, right? He didn't say, yes, it was Francona, but he didn't. So as soon as I went back, I come back on the air. I go, I got some new information. I go. First of all,
you just buried yourself.
Break it.
I know. I need to apologize to Hazel May because I did talk to the source who wrote the Page Six article. He would not confirm it was Terry Francona, but he did confirm it was not Hazel May. So then after the show, what do? Dig my own grave, right? Because there's only probably a couple of hundred listeners. Here I am thinking I've got the whole world listening. So now I go to apologize to everybody, right? So now what am I doing? I'm calling the Red Sox. Stupid me. So I call up the Red Sox, and I get a hold of someone, and they're like, yeah, we'll put you through to Hazel May. And I'm like, oh, great. So I get her voicemail, and I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, all right, Hazel, this is Dakota. I just want to apologize. I, you know, your name was brought up on the show by me about, you know, a potential candidate that you might have been doing something with, Terry Francona or someone. Now Hazel May at the time had this reputation. So even though I was apologizing to her, just the fact that I was even talking about it was like, she didn't want it. The Red Sox didn't want it. They just hired her. All of a sudden.
I've heard stories.
Yeah. So we all have.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden that afternoon, lawyers calling Chicago corporate in 1510. Get that effing kid off the air, or I'm pulling all your media passes. You'll have no access to the Red Sox whatsoever. So Mike Wynn calls me in his office. He goes, Chicago's like, what the hell's going on? I'm like, well, I mean, I was talking about Terry Francona, and it's definitely him. I've got like three sources to back me up on it. He's like, yeah, but that's not the point. I'm like, but it's the truth. I'm like, he's like, yeah, but they're threatening. My hands are tied here. You're not really an employee. You got to go.
Hey, that's how you cause a splash.
Yeah, that's it, buddy. That is it.
So it was so funny. Like the next day. So that afternoon. So I'm like, well, at least let me like say I'm sorry on my goodbye, right? So now Ryan Russillo, Pepe, and John Anik, who's now the big UFC guy, they're doing the show in the afternoon. And so I'm like, all right, well, they're going to have you on the afternoon show and you can apologize, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm already out the door anyways. I'll go and apologize, try to save face a little bit. So Ryan starts like attacking me. And, you know, Ryan has done very well for himself nowadays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Ryan starts attacking me about what I said. And I'm like, I got into a big argument with him on the radio. I'm like, we almost came to blows. Now, he'll kill me. He's probably like 2 feet taller than me. But I'm like, you want me to apologize for something that's true. I'm apologize that I put myself in that situation, that I involved people that wasn't – that I shouldn't have, and I'll apologize for Hazel May. I am not going to apologize for what I said about Terry Francona because I walked myself down that rope and I got to stand by it. And from – I got three other sources that confirm it. So you can say that I shouldn't have said it. That's a whole other whole other argument, right? That's a judgment
call. I spoke the truth.
At least I spoke truth. But nobody believed it anyways. Yeah. And they all thought I was just making it up. And so we got into a huge fight. That was it. The Globe – I think Bill Griffith was the sports writer time for the Globe and how the Red Sox coming after the little guy, this and that. And there was some other stuff early on in the season. I was giving away my season tickets to the Red Sox. They weren't happy during the playoffs, like EEI. Like, I was going after Dennis and Callahan, and they were all about politics. And my moniker was, like, the morning sports brawl, no politics allowed, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And us, we were growing up, we didn't care about politics then until somebody told us to shut the fuck our doors and not leave our house. Then we cared about politics, right? Yeah, exactly. Or how much money we have to pay the government. You know? Yeah. Then we start caring about politics. Or if I could smoke weed legally for you guys, yeah. Right? Yes. So from that standpoint, they were just like, you can't give away. EEI had said something because, I was trying to create a buzz. I'm a marketing guy. I was making a little dent. And EEI at the time was like, they didn't want anybody competing with them. There was no other sports radio station. So they're the rights holder of the Red Sox season tickets. Mm-hmm. So if they call the Red Sox up and say, hey, this kid's giving away his season tickets, you're not supposed to. It's on the back of the ticket. Like, you need, for playoff games, you need written consent from MLB. So I was doing something illegally. Did I care? No, I did it again.
Yeah.
So,
shut up, MLB.
I'm like, but it wasn't the MLB. It was like...
You're lawless, Dakota. You're lawless.
I was probably due to crash and burn anyways, okay? So I'm like, at least I'm going to have fun. I gave the winners, gave them seats to the two tickets to the both of the playoffs games. I got to take some water. I'm taking up all your airtime. And
you're all good. No worries.
Yeah, no water in.
So we have no breaks here. Two-minute break, three-minute breaks.
And we could do a break if we want one.
No, I'm just saying we'll lose our five people that maybe I've already lost because you probably had like thousands of people watching right now. They're like, the last person that we want to hear is Dakota. We hate that guy. So
fuck them.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a story though. Yeah,
how it. And then 3 years later, the Red Sox, when they fire Francona, they leaked the story to Bob Holler how he was cheating on his wife, doing drugs, and he was a bad guy, right? I'm like, yeah, I mean, I had it. I'm like, I had all that information 4 years ago, but you guys fucking put the kibosh on.
Well, now the good thing is you can do a podcast and you can release your own takes if you wanted to.
This is the problem now. Now I'm in bed. I'm doing things. Back then, I had nothing to lose.
I got you.
Now I've got to deal with the MLB Players Association.
Now you really can't fuck up, actually.
I know. So now I'm all my takes. I have to be like, okay, no relationship I'm dealing with, and I'll fuck on everybody. So as it relates to like the Patriots, as it relates to the Celtics, they're fair game. I'm not doing anything with the NBA or the NFL right now. So.
Can you mentioned that Barstool thing a little bit ago.
Yeah.
So you could have worked with them?
So this is what happened. So I got done with it. It ruined my marriage. I ended up getting divorced because I was out all night. I was drinking till 4 in same places with scantily clad women. So I could see how my wife at the time would not appreciate that.
I've been there.
Yeah. Have you? What do you mean you've been there? That's what I like to know.
Yeah, tell.
You were with me? Or?
No. I might have been. You never know.
Had his own take on it.
So we were staying at the place until like 4 in the morning. Yeah. Steve Levy, everybody in Boston, like we just closed the curtains and we were there every night. And so I got burnt out from it. And I remember I filed bankruptcy, folded the magazine, went back home, moved back in with my parents. My mom lived in Braintree up the street here from here. And I got a phone call. And I don't remember if it was Dave or not, but it was. I'm assuming it was him. They got my number, I think, from SJ because they started doing some things. Barstool first kind of launched doing some shows out of the place. And I think SJ gave him my number and said, hey, he just went through this.
SJ is and who?
SJ Torres, who owns the place.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. Greatest Bar, So very successful guy, nightlife guy, was, started as like the manager over at Daisy's way back in the day. So, because of that, I got a phone call and I'm in my kitchen and he's like, hey, we're starting this thing called Barstool. And do you want to be involved? I'm like, not the right time. I'm like, I just need to flush it
relax
down, relax, yeah. Whatever. And then like out of nowhere, you know, what wasn't out of nowhere, then I saw what they did for a couple of years. And then I remember being down in New York in 2008, and Barstool was pretty much just up here. Mm-hmm. And the guys I was talking to down in New York were like, oh, that Barstool was fucking. I'm like, oh, they're going to blow up there.
Yep.
Oh, if it reached New York, then
and it was game over.
Yeah, congratulations to Dave. You know, like, no hard feelings. The only thing Dave ever did that I got pissed at what he did was when he outed Brady's kid. He was showing his dick. Yeah. You know, that was it. I think everything Dave does is fair game, but I think that one crossed the line, probably even more than me talking about Francona, you know.
No, that was bad, yeah. He'll admit that was bad. I don't even know if he does admit that. So, I think he stands by that. He had every right to do that.
I just don't think that. I mean, I had kids at the time, so I'm looking at it going, you got to be fucking kidding me. I'm surprised he's even alive. I'm surprised Brady didn't take him out.
Yeah. Well, Portnoy's made a living off pushing boundaries and pissing people off. That's his thing.
And that's fine. He was in control of his
own. I think you would have been good there.
Yeah.
What if I told you have a similar opportunity right here at Hedgebetter?
Listen, I'm always looking for opportunities.
We're building the next one.
Just 24 hours in the day, and I still haven't done a lot of coke yet, so
let's go, Dakota. That sounds like a yes.
I might have to bring back my coke days. That
welcome
one night,
aboard.
That one night in Vegas.
Well, you definitely got to come back on because we didn't even get to talk sports. Your story.
Well, we could talk a little sports here.
Get me off here because let Pat in here and he'll talk.
We'll get Pat in a second. I wanted to ask about his the Malcolm Butler video that came out.
Yeah.
So I'll let you ride of what you said, but I have kind of a different take through other information. So
I'm not saying that your information is incorrect, but I think there's a lot more to the story because you're probably talking about, you know, everybody wants to know why the hell Malcolm Butler, you know, didn't play in the game. Well, he got one play in and didn't play.
We're talking about the Super Bowl against the Eagles.
Against the Eagles, right?
You always have the controversial stories under your belt, huh?
So, this is what happens. I have a lot of, like,
got sources.
A lot of people tell me things because they know my mouthpiece, and I can't get them in trouble. So they'll kind of filter it through me, which is fine. You know, story for another day. When Alex Rodriguez met with the Boston Red Sox, I'm the one that broke that story. I didn't break it under my name, but I gave it to Tony Maz at the time, and I don't think Maz will care at any point. So I gave it to Maz. I told him that the Red Sox were meeting with Alex Rodriguez. And he goes, what? Why would he do that? He's still under contract. He goes, hold on a second. He called Major League Baseball office. He calls me back. He goes, I think you're right. I'm like, I go, why? He goes, because MLB offices didn't deny it. Like when I was talking with somebody. And then the next day he had a 2-page spread in the Boston Herald how John Henry met Alex Rodriguez on the boat trying to bring him to Boston.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I come across things every now and then. Yeah. And people that I trust that I look at and then I'll try to volley it back and forth. Mentioned to me some time ago about Malcolm Butler, why he didn't play. And we all heard the rumors that Malcolm potentially got into some altercation with Belichick's kid about potentually Belichick's wife, I guess.
That was the story that was
out there. Nobody would talk about it. I'll talk about it now because I don't know if it's true or not. I'm not saying that what it was. Mm-hmm. But somebody told me that I trust, that's been backed up by a few other people, that it was more injury related, that something happened at practice where he got a head injury. They maybe not have coined it as a concussion, but they didn't want the concussion to get out there because then it falls into the league whether or not he could play or not. And the Patriots, I don't know how they decided to handle it.
It's a touchy subject thing too, where you don't really want to say any too much.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So Malcolm Butler, what I was told, ended up going to another local hospital for the analysis that was not affiliated with the Patriots to kind of keep things off the grid. Mm-hmm. And this was about 7 to 8 days before the Super Bowl. He was treated for head trauma. Now, if you look back at that, he got sick during that week, right? They all made excuses. Yeah, he was sick. They didn't want him to travel with the team. Well, if you get a concussion, you're not allowed to fly because of the pressure.
Yeah, can't go, yeah.
So he flew in to the Super Bowl at the very last second. I think he flew in like late Friday or Saturday, missed the walkthrough or something like that. So they were like, you know, what are we going to do? And that was the room. Nobody knew about that because it was something that they just didn't want to talk about. And if you look back at the facts, one, they just brought him back. And even Felger the other day was like, well, there goes those rumors, because if he actually did do something with Steve Belichick's wife, I'm like, they're not
going to come back.
Yeah, right? He's gone for good.
So your point's very valid.
So
there
was
sense.
Something else because Malcolm never mentioned it. None of the players mentioned anything. The coaching staff, they left on good terms. Nothing was said because they were both in it. Malcolm knew that this is the and I'm going to try dressing that day.
See what we can do, yeah.
And probably what happened was they realized that we're not going to dress anybody else. We'll dress you. You can't go. You're going to go play one play, get your game check, and that's it. And that was it. I think they were probably hopeful that he could be ready for that day and never went into a protocol.
After hearing all those cards on the table, that makes a lot more logical sense, especially you making the point of why would they take him back if he did something with Belichick's wife. That's a good point.
Yeah, you can't do that.
And then people are saying, well, how come you're just saying about this? The other guys like Chris, like, geez, you've been sitting on this for years. I'm like, well, you know, you're 95% sure, right? But once they brought him back, I'm like,
it was a clincher.
It was a clincher. So yeah. I'm going to out it, you know, and just deal with it. And I don't think it's a big deal, but it answers the question, right? They had an injury. They were trying to hide it. You know how the Patriots are with injuries.
Hide everything.
They don't discuss anything. No. And everybody's saying, well, geez, all the players would have known. No, that's not the case. The players don't know. They go down their lane, and Belichick keeps everything silent from everybody. So,
I just remember the Brady thumb thing, and you know,
Brady was on the injury report like every game of his career. Was,
yeah. Yeah, and now he's
like
getting
for the week.
Now he's getting head coaches to step down, and
yeah.
Oh,
so that was it. That was the Malcolm Butler, and it wasn't anything. It was a couple of years ago, and then after I video tweeted out, I got a bunch of DMs like. Even like, yeah, you know, you're spot on, you and this and that. And I don't know who they are, but they're obviously maybe either people that were at the hospital that are close to Malcolm and or whatever.
Just a little word of mouth.
I actually think it's better, right? Because
it's way better.
It's way better because they brought him back here. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Patriots don't care. And maybe they'd rather have it out there and let me get it out there because they don't want that over their head. You know,
kill the whole story.
You're
helping him out.
Yeah, in a way. So.
I envisioned the Terry Francona story before I let you go.
Yeah.
I envisioned Will Smith and the Chris Rock. I picture you as Chris Rock.
Yeah. Why? Because I'm 5 foot nothing.
I wasn't going to sports. I'm 5 foot 8'2".
Hey, but there's a thing today out. Short people are in. I don't know if you're
I'm already in there.
Yeah. Short King Spring.
Yeah. So Will
something
just happened today, right? That like short people are now attractive.
It's the announcement of Short King season.
Yeah.
So I need a pick.
I'm 6'1".
Yeah, you're off. You're off the grid. So now me
can't relate.
So me and you need to go out. We'll go to a bar and then we'll just look at the girl and go, all right, well, he's out, right?
I don't think it's going to work.
I need a face in the hole of your face, Chris Rock's, Terry Francona is Will Smith, and then Jada has to be Hazel May.
Yeah.
Hazel May, oh my God.
I don't know what I love that.
Let's make that. We'll make that meme, if you don't mind. We'll run it by you first.
I don't know.
We'll run it by you.
Run it by me.
Of course.
I mean, now it's more sensitive.
Right? Yeah,
it's a little.
Right. Oh no, yeah, you're right. I keep forgetting your relationship now with the fucking MLB.
I know, which sucks because I want to say everything.
Oh yeah, we can't do it.
Two years ago, okay. Here's another inside information that I actually broke on Felger Mass. I called up
this guy's Schefter,
and Felger was fucking laughing at me, and then fucking it got outed 2 days later. So I fucked it up Felger's ass. So anyways, I find out that David Price gets in this altercation with John Farrell at the time. With John Farrell. This is before the whole Eck thing.
Oh, really?
This is way before it. And this was up in Toronto. So I'm like, I'm sitting on this, and I'm like, all right, this is good stuff. So I go on the air. I say, I'm not going to tweet it out. I'm just going to go on the air and talk about it. So I'm like, guys, I got some information for you. And Tony knows that when I get information, I gave him a huge story. So I said, and Felger started laughing. I go, listen, there was a huge altercation up in Toronto with David Price, almost blow to blow, shoving, fuck, I can say that, right?
Yeah.
Almost,
shit, piss.
I can say it. So
say whatever you want.
A lot of swearing, a lot of shouting. Okay. And all of a sudden, Felger goes, how come Dakota from Braintree calls and has this information on this altercation, but none of the beat writers in the Red Sox have any story about whatsoever? 2 days later, one of the Red Sox beat writers, at the end of this story, they mentioned heated argument. That's what they coined it, a heated argument between David Price and John Farrell, and that was it. You know, so stuff like that. Plus, I had John Farrell was fired before everybody else. So that was
just nailing it.
Yeah, had John Farrell's number.
Yeah. Huh? Was that?
Had John Farrell's number.
Well, I had somebody that didn't like John Farrell, obviously. You know.
That's the best poison to have, the haters.
I know. Listen, and now I'm out there everywhere. So people, listen, you can DM me if you want. I don't care. You know, Instagram, actually, since I shut Twitter off, you can't DM me. But I'll take it. I'll take your inside information, but I'm going to cross-reference it.
Of course, as you should.
Yeah,
they should. But that's unreal.
Hot mic question for you over here.
What was that?
Who do you look forward to an inspiration in your field?
Oof.
Great question.
That's a great question. wow, you're gonna have to hit me on the
question.
In what field, though? Like, because I have like three different verticals that I have businesses in.
All of them.
I kind of like to just like in the more like sports media area.
Sports media. Well, I think Felger is fucking phenomenal. So I he's the perfect card for Boston because he's from goddamn Wisconsin, and he's an somebody that just came here and made himself. And I remember when he was on when Ordway used to have him on the Big Show all the time. I'm like, that guy's a star. I'm like, he's good because he's so much hated. You could hate him. And then they did that rap thing. I don't know if ever they used to do tons of skits on EEI back in the day, and they did one on Felger and rap, and it was the most hilarious thing. And so I don't think, like, whether it's emulate or not, I just think from a personality standpoint, Felger gets called the douche all the time. I get called the douche all the time from people, you know, listeners and stuff. So
we've talked to both of you now. I don't think either of you are douches. I mean, personally, at all.
I think, honestly, people,
as a great dude,
people don't know. They only look at you. Shit, I've got...
Yeah, they look at Felger shitting on their teams, and it fucking hurts them for whatever fucked up reason.
Radio is radio. TV is TV. You know, this is a radio personality. I come across, I have conviction in what I say, and I can be arrogant. People don't like that. But if you're my buddy or my friend or whatever, you're not going to have an issue with me. Like, I'm not that guy that people think I am, which is okay as long as you hate me for radio.
I remember him saying, like, happy-go-lucky radio doesn't work either. You got to be critical of teams. You got to say the thing that you don't want, like, the other people to hear, but you have to say it for
like
them.
Jason Tatum. Yeah. Jason Tatum sucked balls, okay? I wanted the guy traded, all right? I was so – the first
here
two
months –
And there it is.
The first
two – Is Felger here?
No, but this is –
I'm kidding.
But I honestly believe this, okay? I have the analytical data in my eye test to prove it, okay? I was even so frustrated. Jason Tatum's first game, the end of the 2 minutes, he went under a pick – and allowed a three-pointer, and I freeze-framed it, and I said, I'm going to go videotape this right now.
Yeah.
So here I'm doing, like, my own X's and O's with my screen, my TV in my living room going, this is lazy right here. Jason Tatum, crunch time going under a pick. You're supposed to fight over the pick and not allow for the three, especially when a three-pointer ties the game.
Yeah, three-point game. Come on now.
And then they shot it, made the three-pointer. He went under it. Then it went to overtime. Jaylen Brown does the same thing on the other side in overtime. They ended up losing the game. I went fucking ballistic. So I was so anti-Tatum for those 2 months, and I had every right to be. All he did was whine on calls. He was selfish. He was shooting 31% from threes. He went the opposite direction of what he was supposed to be going.
Regress.
So I called him out. I called him out, and I said, here are 40 other NBA players I'd rather have over Jason Tatum right now. And I listed them all off.
41?
40. I even forgot to mention Jaylen Brown, so there was 41. Because
you must have got killed for that.
I got killed. The thing had 50,000 views. Every NBA fucking...
Content.
That's a lot of dudes. But I'm with you, too. Yeah. I was a Tatum hater.
Every NBA fucking podcast kid fucking that had three followers was fucking, you know nothing about basketball. And I'm like, well, maybe I don't, but... You know, it is what it is. Tatum sucked, and he did suck. And I'll say it right now, he played phenomenal. Jason Tatum did a 180, and if that's the Jason Tatum, I'm all in. I'm all in. I'm not fucking
recently,
stupid, all right?
I saw this conspiracy theory today.
Yeah. Was that the one that I said about the aliens?
No, I did see that. I didn't. Was that sarcasm or like I don't even know if that was like joking or like.
Listen, people thought I was serious, but it was.
I think it was sarcasm. It was so ridiculous, but.
I know. Well, wait a minute. Is it though? Is it ridiculous though?
No, maybe not.
A little ridiculous.
It's a little ridiculous.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, we all gave it a listen. We're gonna bring that up, but we've been ranting here.
No, I'm okay for you to bring it up.
I want to bring up this other conspiracy I brought. I saw someone saying that a couple of the like players on the Celtics, Tatum and possibly Brown, are not vaxxed, and maybe Embiid on the Sixers is not vaxxed, and that it's Toronto. Yeah,
if they play in Toronto, they can't go.
It will be an issue.
So I, you know,
because apparently they didn't play in this last Toronto game.
That's correct. Yeah. And they visited Toronto, I think, in November, and the vax mandate for the Raptors went into effect December 15th, I think, was the date, somewhere around there. So they never were up there. They never had it. So but I think Jason Tatum has come out and said he is vaxxed.
Well, yeah, the guy who tweeted it had a lot more evidence against Jaylen Brown.
It was more Jaylen Brown and Al Horford.
He was saying like Brown tweeted was tweeting alongside a lot of Kyrie Irving shit. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, I hated Kyrie Irving. I loved Kyrie Irving, then I hated Kyrie Irving. You know, then I loved Kyrie Irving. That's like a love-hate relationship for what he did stomping on the – you know, that's the thing that pissed me off even about Tatum, because if you're the leader of the Celtics and Kyrie goes over and steps
you
on –
you got to hit him, right?
You got to make a message that next time that you see him. You don't fucking go dap him up, okay? You don't. That's a 22-year-old fucking millennial. I don't even know if he's a millennial, but I'll call him a millennial because it sounds like you're a millennial, okay?
So motherfucker.
Exactly. So to me, that pissed me off more than anything else. Like, we're diehard bleed green guys,
oh,
right?
You can't step
like,
on Lucky.
You can't fucking go over there and, like, stomp on fucking Lucky. You
can
don't
you imagine
do that.
What Kevin Garnett would have done if that happened? He would kill him.
Would have ripped his head off.
You imagine what fucking Kevin McHale would have done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Larry Bird would have fucking cold cocked him one time. Kevin McHale would have got them in the fucking headlock, okay? Or even Perkins. Like, that bothered me more about that Celtics team than any bad play. Was not defending your shield.
Some height,
okay?
Yeah.
You just can't do that. And that's the problem in the NBA today with it's all buddy-buddy and I'm going to shake this and dap up that and fuck this, fuck that. You all want to be liked. Fuck it. You're a Celtic. Care about just the Celtics and about your Celtics fan. You don't need to be liked by the fucking LA Lakers or Joel Embiid or whatever
else. We need Durant here. I'm just seeing him on the TV now. Durant's like the kind, he's the kind of guy who doesn't give a fuck about being liked.
Yeah, but fuck Durant, though, okay? He said about us fucking
fuck
fans.
Them all.
He called us racist.
All right. Right? Then we can't bring him here.
He called us fucking racist, okay? You called us fucking racist, all right? I've been called racist enough.
Shut the league down. Blow it up.
Yeah, it's so stupid. So I don't even know where we're going, but you were talking about the conspiracy.
Fuck that. I want to hear about the aliens before we wrap up.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to hear it.
Anyways, all right.
So you are an alien believer, though.
No, I'm not sure. I don't know what to believe. I also don't know what to believe about vaccines and COVID and that whole thing, right? So I put two things that I'm still unsure about, and I mashed them together. And I said, okay, here's the only thing that would make sense to me because I still can't put the pieces together, is that maybe the government has this secret knowledge of aliens abducting humans. And aliens, as we know from growing up, they don't want people that have fucking defects or viruses to bring them back out into outer space because we can infect them. So there could be, in some way, they made up this vaccine in a short amount of time to say, you know what? We realize that the people are getting abducted are the ones that are very healthy. So let's have this virus.
What are your sources?
Can't reveal those.
Don't come out with information unless you have an inside source.
I know. It's Sir Alien. I don't know. Sir Alien.
The aliens have always been around. Why was this happening now? Are we due for an attack?
Phone Dakota.
I don't know. Do you think there are people get abducted? I don't know. I don't have no proof of it. I have no idea if this.
I have no idea.
I will happen to believe that we can't be the only one in the complete galaxy universe.
I agree.
100%.
Okay. I think
so if that's the case, right? You agree with me that we can't be the only living things.
Correct.
That means there are aliens.
Correct.
Right? If we're going to coin other living things in other planets as aliens. So let's go on the fact that there is aliens. If we went up to the moon and found like a certain creature, we'd take it back and we put it in a specimen. We bring it back to Earth and analyze it, right? That's what our expeditions for on Mars or on the moon. We collect samples. We collect things, analyze them. So if there are aliens, there's nothing probably stopping them and preventing them. If they can reach us and come to
from
this
doing
work,
the same thing.
It's a good point. It is a good point.
From doing the same thing. Okay?
That is a good point.
People can get abducted. We heard, like I said, I'm not saying this. There is aliens and this is going to happen. I'm just trying to tie two things together. Why it would make sense and be funny if the government just should have came out and said, you know what? You guys, there's aliens and they're abducting people. But if you get the goddamn fucking shot, okay, you're not going to be abducted.
Good.
And then like, okay, let's all go get vaccinated. And then I said, well, there's probably 10% of the people that said, fuck Earth. I'd rather live somewhere else and fuck the shot. I want to be abducted. And that was it. So that was my conspiracy.
What a take.
Right?
That's incredible.
It was a good video. It was good.
I didn't know if it was just a joke video, but you defended it, so I don't think it is a joke.
But I don't know if it's a joke or sarcasm, but that's just my thought process.
I like it.
I think you're going to have to come back to an interview for Showtime Magic. We're going to have to divulge in these conspiracy theories.
Wait a minute, Showtime Magic? You mean
we have another sit-down non-sports interview. We can get real deep. We got some different couches.
Crazy stuff.
I have a very wide range. We still didn't even get to me stripping. driving and all that stuff.
So. Oh, you this is that's what I'm saying. You're coming back with these messages.
Yeah. No, no. Honestly, I've never stripped. I've dated a few strippers, but I've never stripped.
That'll do too.
Yeah, you guys are in the same boat.
Literally the same one. It's, yeah, right it's, up his ass. It's just sailing down the Atlantic as we speak.
And we all got nicknames.
And the first one, I didn't even know she was a stripper. I was outside of Daisy's, and this girl all of a sudden just comes up to me. She's like, she was cute. She was leaving. I was walking into Daisy's, and I'm like, I was very attracted to her. Obviously, she's a stripper. And she's like, where are you going? She was with this female friend. And I'm like, well, I'm going into Daisy's. I'm with my buddy. She's like, well, come with me. And I'm like, this is not how it works. I'm trying to go to the bar to find some girl, not like find the girl in line and leave with her. I'm like, I need at least a couple hours with my buddy. She's like, fine, here's my number. So after a couple hours of drinking, I call her up. She lived over in Brighton Ave, somewhere near BU or whatever. And I go over there. I end up hooking up with her. Her friend's there. And all of a sudden, I'm on the couch with her. Hopefully, babe, if you're listening, too bad. Who cares? You have to listen to it. So anyways, I'm hooking up with her on the couch, and all of a sudden I can see, because in those brownstones, like in BU, it's like a long hall where you can see into the bedrooms. And all of a sudden I see the other girl like watching us, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
You invited her in, right?
No, I didn't. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. This is the first time I was with her. So I didn't know that she was like bisexual. She was like a lesbian. The other girl was a full-blown lesbian, so she wanted nothing to do with me, but she was jealous of the girl that I was with. I come to find out that she was a stripper. I didn't know. She didn't tell me she was a stripper. So I started dating her a few other times, and then finally she lets me know, hey, can you drop me off at the Naked Eye Cabaret? I'm like, what do you thought? You a waitress now? She's like, no. She's like, no, I'm a dancer. I'm like, what do you mean you're a dancer? She's like, well, I strip there. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. So then I'm like, I'm talking to my brother. I'm like, what do I do? I'm like, now I just found out she's a stripper. He says, I'm like, early 20s. I'm like, well, the sex is good, so I'm just going to keep dating her. What the hell? You know, just be careful, you know, the way it is. So that
was it. At the end of the day, sometimes it's all that matters.
Yeah, I know. And then the next girl that I ended up dating, and she wasn't a stripper, she became a stripper. She was like 6 feet Amazon, like huge, like perfect stripper body. You know, just
where can we find her? Glass slipper, centerfolds? Is she still in the game?
Well, the Alex's.
No, she was
the Amazon.
The other one that's.
The six first, footer.
Oh, no, she was at King's Cabaret, I think, down in New York. I never saw her strip. I never saw the other one strip. And so funny. So my cousin was living in Sharon at the time, and he was very naive. I was a little bit more experienced. I'm 2 years older than him. And he calls me up, and his parents were never home. So he was at home and having a party at his house in the middle of the fucking day. It's like a Wednesday at like 1 p.m. He's like, Steven, you gotta come over. I'm like, why? He goes, I'm here with all my friends and there's too many girls. I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you have to come over. So I'm like, all right, fine, I'll go over there. He's like, you need to take this girl out of the way. I'm with this other girl and this other girl's trying to get with me. Can you just kind of talk to her and like keep her away from me? Anyway, she's like six feet and foot over me. And I'm just like, all right, whatever. So I ended up talking to her, we got along, ended up hooking up, dating her for like 6 months. At the same time, I was dating the other stripper, and the other one became a stripper.
Sorry, save this for Showtime Magic. Yeah. You already told me.
So anyways, that's it, you know. So.
I love it. Oh, wow. That's how we got it. I guess ended on that, but that was great.
Yeah, what a
Dakota
story.
From Braintree, appreciate you coming on, man.
Electric. Electric.
How in the world did I not know you guys even existed or were in Braintree in my backyard?
Well, now you do.
Shame.
We want to hear. Come back. Yeah. Come back. Yeah. This is Barstool 2.0, baby.
Oh, we're going to spin it now to Slight Edge Fitness and Performance. Craig Kelly does a great job over there. Summer's coming. Beach Bod's got to make it happen.
2022 is here. Do you have your resolution? Here's an idea. Make your way down to Slight Edge Fitness and Performance located in Braintree, Mass. Owned and operated by Coach Craig Kelly, you can be assured you are getting the best training around. Whether looking to improve your health, or gain a slight edge on your competition, this is the gym for you. Group fitness classes as well as personalized one-on-one training are both available. Make sure to visit slightedgefit.com as well as follow them on Instagram at slightedgefitness and set up a consultation today. It's time to get fit, so let it rip.
So that was Dakota from Braintree. We're now introduced by Patrick J. Foley, and we're having another segment of Laying Down the Law. So, we haven't seen in a couple weeks live in studio. How is it tonight? Sorry we're making you wait for a little bit. I saw you getting hungry over there.
I was, man. You guys made me shut up. We jacked up there 90 degrees. We got all this Bruce Arians talk up there. They're trying to make that sound like it's on the level. We got the Brooklyn Nets on. I mean, you guys got a setup and a half out there. I mean, Matt, you could have left me out there all night.
We stood you up.
The entertainment's live.
And we would have been just fine.
I'll congratulate you. I took Arkansas last week, and you took Duke. You're victorious. You got the win.
The kids, thank you.
Yeah,
the
kids. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's all for the kids, baby.
It's actually March 31st, so we got to come up with what, whatever we
we'll get the price.
We'll get there.
I think I'm 5-1, boys.
I think my only loss is my poor nieces. My only loss, girls' high school basketball.
Damn shame.
Trying to be a good uncle cost me going undefeated, huh? Jesus.
To your point, it was a tough game.
Oh, yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, tough matchup. Tough matchup.
Tough matchup, I should say. Well, leading on to this week, as for me, I think there'll be a couple picks here, but the final four this weekend, Villanova versus Kansas, North Carolina versus Duke. So I have a future at, I think I got at like plus 1,500 for Kansas to win the whole damn thing. And I think Villanova, one of their best players, is out for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, Justin Moore. He was Justin having Moore. A horrible game before that, though.
Okay, so Our guy, Remy Martin. Arizona State transfer, who had a hell of a weekend last weekend.
All-name team.
I'm going to take all-name team of all time with Taco Fall. That's a good one. But I'll take Kansas to beat Villanova in the Final Four matchup to get to the title game.
All right. All right. All right. It's Duke all the way.
It's Duke.
Duke. Duke.
Boo.
Duke.
Boo.
Dave.
Boo!
The Duke UMC.
Mike, why do you care about Duke?
Shut the fuck up over there.
I fucking hate him. I don't want Coach K winning on his last year.
Duke UNC always, it's like the last 100 games, it's like 50 to 50. UNC pummeled them in Coach K's last home game. Duke somehow got a shot at redemption, and they're going to kick the shit out of UNC.
I thought they were going
to. UNC on the Trojans?
No, UNC. UNC. UNC.
There you go. So they beat Arkansas, and then who they beat before? Texas Tech?
Yeah.
So they had two great victories last week in Duke. I thought they were going to lose both games going into it. They survived. But now you play the big ACC matchup. But they said the first time ever in the tournament. Yeah. That's like hard to believe.
Wild.
So Duke's favored by 4. You're taking Duke to win.
Yeah, it was meant to be.
Come on, what Duke is doing so good, though, this tournament, when you really watch them, is they're finishing.
Some of these games, the end.
They're so neck and neck. And the way they've been playing the last... You know, 6 minutes, and you look at Texas Tech, you look at the Michigan State game, the Arkansas game. I thought Izzo was going to end his career for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
But they're just a resilient team, and they stick to it. And they just, I mean, the Sweet 16 was Texas Tech.
Yep.
And just the way they took over that last 4 minutes, I mean, that was incredible.
They've all been tug of war for the most part with like 10 minutes left in the half, and then they just take yank it.
No, but that's why it always, you got the Cinderella's and shit early on, but then it becomes like, it ends up Kansas, Villanova, UNC, and Duke, because you get there, and then you got to end it.
And that's a suspect 8 seed, too. I mean, that's 8
seed. Definitely, yeah, definitely.
UNC, I mean, I'm not even a part of this, but I think I am. I don't know.
Be a part of it. You got a microphone. Say something.
Yeah, no, Christ, I'm saying. Well, I mean, I'm taking UNC money line. Brady Manek is gonna. They're gonna win again. They're getting hot at the right time. They since that playing game, since beating Duke, they're a winning team. Villanova does hit their free throws. I would have liked to bet them. I probably will.
I will say NC though, like I say, the eight seed is like suspect because they were rolling the ACC tournament. The reason why they're an eight seed is they played VTech and lost by like a billion. So that's why they are where they're at right now.
Well, they had to play in. They were a play in game.
Who?
UNC.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
No, they're an eight seed.
Yeah, they played in. You know how they do that?
In the ACC tournament?
No, in the...
No, they were not a playing team. There's no way they were playing team.
What do you mean? Because it was like...
They weren't?
It was like an eight...
Laying the law down.
Yeah.
No. And at times, that they do like 4 games before like the big tournament starts, and but it was like an 8. They were an 8 versus an 8.
We do not live in a world where the 8 seed plays an 8 seed.
I swear to God, that was on.
Look it up.
I'm laying down the law.
NCAA bracket. I look at it right now.
I swear to God, it was Maryland. Did they play Maryland?
No, it was 11 seeds, 12 seeds, and 16 seeds. All you guys are wrong.
They played 9 Marquette first.
You laid down the law.
Well, no, wait. Can you explain that, though? Because in all, I didn't say that UNC played, but I did say.
He said
UNC.
No,
I said UNC.
Oh, he
said
you're a real lawyer now.
No. You went right with your boyfriend over
there. No,
you did come right with me.
Typically.
That's what he
said. Came over and held my hand. And
but
you were
typically,
wrong.
Isn't it not a 12 seed? Why was a 12 seed playing?
That's what usually happens. They usually have a 12 seed.
I thought
UNC had
was a playing game.
Typically?
Winner gets in to play a 5 seed, 11 seed, 11 seed. Winner
you're
gets
right.
in to play
I'm
a 6
wrong.
seed.
I'm wrong. I admit it. I admit it. Magic, it doesn't change my pick.
Magic, do you have a pick this week? We're going around the room.
My pick's UNC.
He's just, wow. He just coattailed Anton.
His first laying down the law. That
I didn't even hear Anton's pick, to be honest.
What do you want?
Pat, we're going to give you the floor.
I love a good Disney ending. Coach K.
Coach Duke, K all the way?
Duke.
Let's go.
No, Duke tradition. You know, it's like the Yankees. It's like the Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Very aggrieved.
Wait, with that being said, it's not who's the best team, but it's the best team right now. I'm going with Tar Heels.
Fuck you, Mike Steele. Fuck you.
Welcome, Pat.
Can't wait for Saturday. Can't wait.
Wait, so it's all you guys against Steele? Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Steele versus the world.
I get to hide in the other game.
Would you pick Kansas?
I pick Kansas against Villanova.
I think I would have. I think Kansas is the best team in the tournament left
by far.
But I think Nova they're like a 90% free throw shooting team. That's
Nova's
very much needed in a Final Four.
They have good defense. I feel like every game they've been playing is like low score.
So they have like an 8-year player in Gillespie.
Still, your Miami team got absolutely stoned last week.
Oh, by Kansas basketball, dude. Sick. That's awesome, dude.
Smoked, huh?
Yeah. Celtics talk.
Celtics talk. We didn't really get too much into that.
We were too busy talking about weird shit with Dakota.
A bunch of shit. That was cool.
Me and Adam we're at the Garden on Sunday.
We are at Sunday. Yeah,
that's terrible.
Matt got the trip to there. So we started at the North End with all the uncles and stuff watching the games, and then Matt definitely was the drunkest of them all. We got in there. We're watching the game. Not to mean to blow up your spot, Anton, but I can't
blow it up. Blow it up.
Feeling it right now.
I almost fell down the row.
He dropped his phone like 4 or 5 times, sitting next to Father Paul right there,
who is gonna kill me.
And then he dropped it for another time, like probably two like seats in front of him. Goes down to get it, almost trips, and I believe Paul grabbed him by his boxes.
Yeah, he
and
knew.
Pulled him back up. He's like, "All right, let's get the hell out of here." We left in the third quarter.
Were you guys balcony or somewhere nice?
No, we were nice.
We had nice seats.
We were up 27.
You can act like that in the balcony, but step your game up.
And I blame Matt for Rob Williams tearing his meniscus because we were at that game.
I have called that since like every time I've been on this podcast. I was like, "We need to trade him before we don't have him for the playoffs." Like I have said that.
Great logic.
Have I not?
So afraid that
plan
we just
sucks,
trade him.
But he's also like he's not here.
Yeah, I don't back trade him.
I have said
he's gonna
it.
Get injured. Anyone can get injured at any time, though. Really,
this guy was going down.
You do
forever.
You do know it? Like it was going way too well. Like something did have to like happen. Like it was like we weren't just gonna run the table smoking every fucking team in sight. Like that wasn't gonna happen.
Yeah, those top 4 seeds, I mean, they're all on top of each other. They're all interchangeable.
Oh, yeah.
That second round, if no one gets upset in the first round, that second round of the playoffs is going to be incredible because any 4 of those teams could, you know, take the East.
Well, easily.
And then you still have the Nets that are got Simmons coming back. Yeah. And
doesn't matter.
I thought that was the best loss they've had all season last night. You know what? Go like 500. Maybe even lose more than you win these last couple games. I do not want to play Brooklyn in the first round. That would just be awful.
Oh, feed the Bulls.
Yeah, feed the Bulls, the Cavs, the Raptors. Raptors could barely beat our JV team the other night where Marcus Smart's our leading scorer.
They could, yeah, that was wild. I think that was Vegas, though.
Who's your favorite player on the Celtics?
Favorite player? I go Tatum.
I got Rob Williams has probably been my favorite player this year. What do you guys got? Anything cool? Good?
For what, the Celtics?
Yeah, Celtics.
Probably Smart, dude. I love it.
Oh, PP. Peyton Pritchard's been playing nice, though.
Peyton Pritchard's awesome.
He's solid off the bench. He really is.
Yeah, he's great.
Last night, though, he literally was lost almost. Like, if he can't get his shot off, if they're covering him, it's tough. Like, he couldn't find anywhere. He couldn't get any space. And then he's kind of useless. Like, he can be turned into nothing and extremely fast, in my opinion. Like, in a game, he can be, you know, just sitting on the sidelines on the court.
But if everybody else is rolling,
right,
and he's in the flow of it, I mean, he's such a nice player off the bench. And that's, you know, that's the difference when you get in the playoffs. You get a guy that comes off the bench, you can just, you know, consistently stick a 3-pointer when the other guys are on their game. And, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just get hot real quick, go on a run for a bit.
That's why Grant Williams just sitting over in the corner is so much better than Semi just chucking him up the past couple of years. It makes my day seeing that.
That's why when I say, like I say, oh, I hope they lose more than they win these last couple games for seeding. That doesn't necessarily mean these are a wash. I think you should get these guys who haven't played at all, you know, some more minutes, some more pull. So instead of playing, now you have no Rob Williams, seven, maybe eight guys, maybe a guy who can hit some shots down the stretch, and the guy Hauser, Sam Hauser, maybe he could hit some threes to, you know, help you get back in it. I think
Sam Hauser is not going
to
see a second.
You're reaching.
You at St. Anne's, would you play Pat Hauser going in the playoffs in the CYO?
Never. What do you think, though? How much is the coach?
I think it's a lot. I think it's a big cultural thing, especially during the trade deadline. Obviously, no one liked Dennis Schroeder. I've heard it from, you know, all the sports media guys and basically the team saying that he was trying to do a one-man show when he was out there. So Derek White has been basically the best get for this team all season because he can play both ways. He does so much for you. He's honestly plays kind of like Marcus Smart, but doesn't try to shoot like 20 times
a game. Yeah, he's almost like it's almost like, dude, like Derek White, shoot it.
Yeah.
Like at some points of the game, like you just
he played well the other night. And how about the everyone was shitting, speaking of the Schroeder trade, that the Daniel Tice thing.
I love Tice.
And now he's coming in big because you have Rob Williams hurt. So now he's going to go in and try to fill in some shoes. I know they had, like I said, their JV team the other night against the Raptors. He played very well.
That's another thing. Do you know? So if you go to Canada right now, you don't want the Raptors.
I already brought that conspiracy up with Dakota. I know exactly where you read that from, Tommy G.
No.
Oh.
Somewhere.
Tommy G on Twitter. He's a big conspiracy guy.
Tommy G. Yeah, but you have to be vaccinated, so you don't know who's vaccinated or not.
Yeah, we don't want to play Toronto.
Yeah, you don't want to, because if Tatum, I'm pretty sure is, but we don't know about Brown. We don't know about
Horford. I have a feeling that Brown isn't, but
that's so he couldn't play in the away games against
Brown. No, I get that.
It, 2.5 years later, we're still talking about
this. Yeah.
Yeah, crazy
3 weeks flat the curve.
Well, China's already shutting down again. It's not even fucking gone.
He's coming back.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
What about a little update? Can I just update us? Yep. Carson Wentz, huh? Our boy. Yeah. And the next day, we left here. Jim Irsay basically hates him.
Yeah, he was saying we had to move on from this. Like, fuck this.
They cut him. They try to trade. And now he's in Washington or something. So it was, I saw that headline. I thought of you guys right off the bat. Like, you were sitting there ripping a random podcast here in Braintree. Good Carson Wentz talk. Ripping on him. Next day, headline. Owner hates him. Players hate him, coaches hate him.
See ya.
And then I saw something today that reminded me of you in this show, and it was Colin Cowherd on his FS1 ranking the top NFC East quarterbacks, and he ranked your guy number one over Dak Prescott. I thought that was hysterical.
He's just trying to get ratings.
Oh, and who can blame him there?
But I'll tell you what, though, Matty Ryan to the Colts, though. That's a great pickup. Perfect.
Does that not remind you a little bit of Philip Rivers going there, though? And you, I got excited about that.
Rivers did great for them.
Great. I guess they have Jonathan Taylor that's a beast now, too. Like, they had him, but not the Jonathan Taylor they had.
And Matt Ryan is, I think, a little bit more young. Younger, more left in the tank.
That's fair.
Yeah, he's better now than Philip Rivers was when he was on the
court. They both played for absolute loser franchises, but like now maybe they play for a loser franchise that could win now.
He's better than Wentz.
I know.
Definitely better than Wentz.
But the difference with Rivers and Wentz, I think, when they both went to Indy with Frank Reich, who can coach quarterbacks really well, is Rivers knew his arm was shot. So if you looked what he did with like Nyheim Hines, and he did stuff with the tight ends, he was getting the ball out of his hands quick. I think he only threw
Big Ben this year.
Like 10 interceptions that year, but he was solid. Now, Wentz came in. If you look at Nyheim numbers this year with Wentz, there were he wasn't taking that check down stuff.
Right.
So it was... So
yeah, trying to sling it.
Yeah.
And it's...
So Rank was able to rein in Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was solid when they had everything else in place. Wentz was kind of he wasn't bad actually the first 12 games either. The last four games he just imploded.
Oh yeah, he was awful.
Since we have made this the Carson Wentz segment, which I'm all in for, is there any discussion where we can debate who's better right now, Carson Wentz or Mac Jones?
Mac Jones all day.
All day?
All day.
Okay, there's no conversation.
I don't think there's a conversation.
I think there's a little conversation.
Gross.
No, I don't think so.
1 year.
So like what, Carson Wentz on the Patriots? Or No.
Yell at me, cry.
Yeah, there's no.
Okay. Mental toughness, okay, that's a big suit.
Zero. Mental toughness.
They should have got Matt Ryan, if anything.
Literally none.
No, Matt Ryan. Nah, Matt.
If he,
oh, actually, yeah.
If they could have got QB Matt Ryan, I would rather than Wentz for sure. I don't know.
I think Matt Ryan got a lot more left in the tank than people think.
Oh, yeah.
He would have been great here. Why didn't we go for him?
He's a BC guy, too.
Because they were still somewhat good. Oh, and money.
We have Mac Jones.
Well, no, beforehand he's talking about.
I think Atlanta's still paying him $40 million this
year.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous.
That's tough.
For a third round pick.
Just
can I talk about two of these owners?
Yeah, right? Get it going.
Hey, man. So this is your night.
They trade Ryan, right? For like a third round pick, which I think is like for the cheap for him. And Arthur Blank's up there crying, but he loves him like a son. And like, save it, dude. Save it.
Arthur
Blank looks like a bad guy, like the, with his mustache, like in the movies, like the
when he's on the sidelines at 28-3, he looks like a Batman villain. He does.
I heard Matt Ryan on PMT, and they just brought up 28-3 right away. Like let's just get it out of the way. Let's just throw it on table.
What did he say?
Good. He was just like, yeah, it was unfortunate. Like one of the worst things that ever happened in my life. And basically, like, we had a lot of chances to win it. We made a lot of good plays, but, like, we just couldn't get it done. It was just so sad. It reminded me of the video that resurfaced a couple weeks ago, actually speaking of BC alum, of the kid at the press conference crying about how his favorite memory of basketball was going out to eat and having lunch with his friends because they didn't win shit on the court.
I remember that kid. Yeah.
I swear we played against that kid in fucking North Quincy.
Yeah, dude, that kid was just like the sixth man on like BC.
He was on like Bridgewater Raynham. Dennis, I swear his name's Dennis. I remember him.
Let's get him on the pod. Let's have him see what he says about that.
I mean, I don't know him like that, but sure, we can try.
Yeah, we can get him.
That franchise has never been the same since.
Oh, no, it's crumbled. They just died. Implode. Yeah.
But the funny thing is, like, as bad as they choked, like, that's not on Matt Ryan. It's on your coach.
No. I could not believe they kept Dan Quinn. I could not believe
Matt
it.
Matt Ryan was the MVP of that game up until halfway through the fourth quarter. I mean, I think if you want to talk about a bigger choke job, I mean, had Tampa hung on to win that playoff game in the divisional, the Rams, because you look at the Atlanta thing, right? That was coaching. The Rams, like, you had a running back fumble it. You had him snap it over the quarterback's head. You had a late hit.
Yep. You should have won that game by 20.
But I'm just saying, that was a collective.
Yeah, that was a team,
job.
Yeah.
I mean, Atlanta, like, Julio Jones makes that great catch. Ryan throws that great ball that should have ended it. Mm-hmm. And you have, like, a holding call. Like, I would call some offensive lineman holding a choke job. I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
But the coach's play calling was totally.
That was the crazy thing if you want to, like, compare that game to the Rams-Bucks game this year. Like, the Patriots have to do everything right to, like, win that game. If the Bucks did, like, half the things right, they would have won that game. If they did everything right, they probably won that game by, like, 20 points. I mean, you're talking about they had at least three unsuccessful drives where the offensive line with injuries and stuff kind of got to them. But that was taking another Tom Brady Super Bowl chance away, which the Rams banked on that. But
yeah, you're saying the Atlanta thing, it's like we needed like 15 things to happen, and every one of them had to happen.
Yeah.
And they did.
It was unbelievable.
Two-point conversions. And then the holding call, then the missed field goal. And
the greatest comeback of our lives.
Yeah. That game was so unbelievable.
And now we have the 10th best quarterback in the AFC. And not the best defense. And a 70-year-old coach. Who's our offensive coordinator but defensive specialist? So that's who we are.
Yeah, we have no titles.
Let's ride.
Let's go.
Find a new team.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, we got the
shut up. Shut up. He's going to root for Miami.
Number one.
Tampa.
Tampa's back. Yeah.
Unless Tom goes to Miami, I would root. I would switch. That's an easy switch.
Yeah, you're right down the street, 2 hours away.
Did anyone see Will Smith get slapped?
No, yeah. Stage.
How could you not?
Stage.
Daniel Radcliffe had a good take on it. He was like, the take is, we can't talk about it anymore. It's been over talked about. Yeah. A good take from Harry Potter, honestly.
Movie review. I watched. I had to go see what the fuss was about because he won the Oscar. I watched King Richard. Phenomenal film. He was powerful stuff. The Serena.
Oh,
Venus
was it good?
It was great. It was great.
I haven't wanted to watch, especially after that. So maybe he did. Good. Maybe he did do that. Honestly, slap to hype up sales.
If you go in and watch the movie, like his character, like he. That's like in character what that character would have done.
I love it then.
So it's like, was he in character? Is it staged?
Yeah, could he not turn it off? Yeah.
Will Smith's what? Like 6 minutes.
Is that assault? Would you defend him in court?
Oh, we beat that all day. even though I do like all real estate now, I can still gas it up and go into court one time and get him off of that. Guaranteed. I will go a totally incentive based retainer off of him.
Will, if you're hearing this,
what would you do for a guy like on the podcast that you sponsor that might have? I shouldn't say too much, but like,
we can talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. If we could,
you gotta slip him a retainer though before you talk at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Friends and family discount. Yeah, friend of the program.
It's not even in state, so.
Road trip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll like where it's at.
We'll bring the microphones and a mobile sauna.
Well, you did want to talk a little bit about. So, how's business going? I am actually a licensed real estate agent. Don't know if I don't really make sales, but
let's go make it happen, buddy.
Yeah.
I wish I was on camera. I would have something to say, but fuck. Let's make it happen. Business is booming.
We've had our best quarter. And last year was our best year, and so we just keep growing. So it's exciting.
How many people work at?
I have two under me right now.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Awesome.
Tight knit.
Yeah. Just looking to keep growing. So we have an office. Obviously, all of our bread and butter is down here. Quincy, Boston, Braintree. Small little office down the Cape.
Nice.
So we just keep looking for other opportunities, and I just love what we're doing.
Very good. Very good.
Absolutely. What part of the Cape?
It's in Osterville. So it's small. Okay. We just do a little bit down there. Like I said, our bread and butter's all down here.
Should I send you realtors that I know?
Send anyone you know.
You want realtors, right? To work that?
Anyone you know, buddy.
All right. I got you some realtors.
We'll take good care of them.
Connections to connections. There we go.
That's what we do here.
That's laying down the law.
friends.
I think we got a red.
But it's up. Yeah. It's so good, though. I mean, because most of the stuff I'm doing is in the community that I grew up in. And as we've gotten, busier. The stuff I really enjoyed doing, like last night, a kid I've been friends with for 30 years, right? Him and his wife bought an investment property. You know, being able to help them because, you know, you see their kids and that's going to help their kids long term. And then as busy and as big as we get, you know, that's going to help me give them more opportunities because I'm going to be able to have access to more things to be able to help people like that.
Very true. Very true. Circle of life.
That's right, buddy.
Keep it going. Exactly.
You get the little
hyenas?
Yeah. We'll put a GIF up there.
Wrap up there. Folks, want to thank you for tuning in, as well as Dakota from Braintree and Patrick J. Foley for coming on, man. Yeah. It's great for you to come in. I always love you coming in. We'll come in every week if you want.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
We got to do a video, too. Are we doing the donations this next week?
We'll do it next time we're in.
Do you know the foundation we're going to?
Yeah, we're doing Quincy Specialties Baseball.
And we're going to go deliver the check to them?
I don't know. Is it enough to get a check?
I was going to say, there should probably be a limit. I mean, like a minimum to check. Yeah, I think we should.
We'll whack up a total. We'll see who.
Yeah, we'll whack up a total. We don't got to do over the air. But,
there's some money going to them. I know that.
Yeah, so you guys.
Yeah.
Winners.
Next time, don't pick 16 seeds to be one seed.
Yeah, I mean.
But I did that for the kids, Pat.
And don't pick your niece's basketball. That's underdogs.
Lessons learned.
Again, for the kids on both sides of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, guys, I love having you up here, guys. I really appreciate having you there.
That's all from Steel and Naz. Be safe out there, everybody. And, go Kansas. Let's go.
Let's go, Duke.
Let's go Tar Heels.
Yeah, great run, Coach.
Yeah.
Show goes on.
Oh, man. That's good.
Good stuff.
Absolutely. Gotta love it.
What do you do? You know a bunch of realtors?
I've been in a couple offices.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll get you some names. Correct.
I can't wait to see how much at least one of these dickheads is down in fucking poker out there.
they've been cashing out.
I've seen it.
Cali. San Diego.
San Diego.